Kia ora, this program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Wellington Access Radio, make your voice heard.
Carter, August Fauntleroy, Capital Irish. You've just tuned in to Capital Irish on 106.1 FM Wellington Access Radio. I'm Alice Paul and I'll be with you for the next half an hour or so. We come to you every Sunday at noon and we have a lovely team of presenters and technicians like Douglas O'Sullivan today, who's helping out on to do all the technical work. But it's a really, really important day today because we're celebrating the birthdays, three birthdays at the Hutt Valley Irish Society, three amazing people who are turning 90. First, we have Dora Murphy from Dundalk, a wonderful woman, great character, John Brophy from Dublin, and Johnny Desmond from County Cork. But today, I'm going to interview John Brophy because John, he kindly agreed to this interview and we just sat and had the most beautiful chat and recorded it earlier today. So I hope you'll really enjoy it. And thanks to our sponsors, of course, who allow us to do this, Butler's Chocolate, Peter and Susan McGuinness, Hutt Valley Irish Society, and the Wellington Irish Trust. Good meal and my hug of John, and thank you for agreeing to do this wee interview with me today. I'm 90 years old,
you're
or young.
Welcome. Thanks very much. You're very welcome.
Yeah. And John, I won't tell them about your background, but just one thing, you were born in Dublin in 1931.
1931, 2nd of March, 1931.
And where were you born in Dublin?
I was born on the north side of Dublin in Summerhill, but I think I was born in the Rotunda Hospital, but that's where we lived.
Yes, in Summerhill. And your parents Dubliners, or had they come from the country?
Both of my parents were Dublin.
Yeah.
Phil and May, or Mary, I suppose. But I never knew my mother.
Oh, didn't you?
No, my mother died before I was 2 years of age, I think.
Oh.
But Mum had 7 live births.
Wow.
And 5 of us got through.
Yes.
It was a very difficult time in Ireland at the time with the way things were. Where we lived in Summerhill was a tenement dwelling.
Yes.
Which had probably had about 10 or 15 families in there sharing one toilet and yes, those sorts of things. So that's the situation I was born into. And I was the last, and I'm still the last.
The youngest.
Because there's none of us surviving but me.
Oh, and when your mother died when you were 2, did your father, how old were the children he was left with?
Well, Richard was the eldest. I think he was 9, and there was Philip. I don't know what I really don't know, but to tell the story properly is probably just as well to say what really happened after that.
Yes.
Because when Mum died, my father married again.
Right.
Another woman that had 5 children.
Wow.
She had 5 children, but one died. She had 4 children when my father married again.
Yeah.
And they had 2 of the second union, 2 children, boy and a girl of the second union. So we were the last of consideration then. So
yes.
We were made wards of the court, to make a long story short.
Yeah.
And we finished up in institutions.
Right.
So
which institution did you have to go to?
Well, Richard being the eldest, he went to a Christian Brothers in Carrigley.
Yeah.
In Dunleary, and Philip, Pat, and I went to a convent that was in Black Rock called St. Teresa's, run by the French Sisters of Charity.
Right.
And for myself, I was there. Well, I think we were all there about the same length of time. I was 6 years, I think. Might have been 6 years there. And then we graduated and went to where Richard was. But
okay,
Richard had left
Brothers.
By then.
Oh, okay.
Because he was 15. Mm. I would have been about three at the time.
Mm.
And I can still remember being taken out to this convent on the tram.
My goodness, imagine three.
My father and my Uncle Johnny took us out. And we went into this place and we met the Reverend Mother was called a Masseur because they were a French order.
Of course, yeah.
And
Masseur.
Masseur. And we stayed there all the time. We were well cared for, but, you know, probably luckier than many.
Yes, and they were good.
They were good.
Order.
And I think when it came time to leave, my two older brothers were supposed to be going up to this school in Dunleary. And they said, well, we do it, John. And we're going to say, you know, he's not old enough yet. So they packed the three of us, to make a long story short, packed the three of us up into that. And I spent 6 years there.
I never
saw a family life.
Oh.
From the time I was three till the time I was 15.
Imagine,
at which time I was released.
Yes.
On a,
yes.
on the world, if you like.
Yeah. And John, you were educated there through the Christian Brothers then?
Yeah, yeah.
And I know you very well. I think I know that you're a man of great intellect and great with the Irish language.
Yeah.
So all the negatives that we often hear would have been probably balanced out with the positives of a great education, do you think?
Not great.
No.
I just felt that we were shortchanged in the education stakes because, as you say, with the Gaelic, it came in at the time that Ireland was trying to recover.
That's
from
right.
The years of Anglicisation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they introduced the Gaelic language as a compulsory.
That's
in,
right.
In the school curriculum.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And I think we suffered from that a little because the young minds trying to formulate Anglican teaching and to suddenly have Gaelic, although
thrown
it wasn't
into the mix.
Don't get me wrong, I loved it.
Oh, you do, and you're very good at it. Yeah.
But I never seemed to get enough of the other. I thought it must have been the state of my mind that I didn't.
You were hungry for more knowledge of...
I got confused,
okay.
Really. I remember getting confused because do, fa, hench, and a do, and then one, and one, and two, or three, and all these were a bit confusing. And as the numbers got higher, I was reckoning in my mind in Gaelic to turn it back into English.
That
was what I envisaged in my mind. But
Just to interrupt John for a wee second, it's really important to know that in between 1930 and 1940, we were between the two world wars as well, and Dublin had become overcrowded because all the people from the rural areas migrated to Dublin. There was no work, there was mass unemployment, there was poor housing. It was nobody's fault except the political situation in Europe and in the world at the time.
Yeah.
And you, had anybody chosen to be born in the 1930s, they probably would have said no thanks. It was a very difficult, very poor time.
Yeah. And it reflected that in the later the years that were to come because the children were terribly, I think, disadvantaged in the education sector.
Mm.
So it was great to see that being resolved in the later years.
Yes.
when things got better. So, yeah.
So John, we'll jump a bit here. You were a free man at 15. What did you do then? Did you do a job? I have a job in Dublin, well, or did you find work?
I went into a home that had 13 people living in it. It was only a three-bedroomed home.
Yeah.
So life was difficult there. And to try to assimilate with people I didn't even know was
for quite the first
hard.
Time.
So I was a bit of a rogue. And probably is in the formative years, it was probably gave me a sense of rejection and things like that, you know. So. I make no excuse for that, but I just say that's how it was.
That's how it was,
you know,
from your start.
I was the last in the line of acceptance, so I was rejected.
Yes, absolutely. And a rejection is a very...
Well, I smile at it. And in the end, we all finished up friends, and, you know, and they've all died off. And, you know, I can't blame them. They had what they got, you know. They probably didn't want me in there. But that's how it was, and of course, emigration was the only thing to look forward to.
So did you emigrate to England first, or what?
Yeah, well, I had a job as such. I got various jobs, but there wasn't a, you know, having the scar tissue of an institutionalized youth.
Yes.
It wasn't a great recommendation for any jobs, so...
No.
So
and of course, people
jobs.
Were very judgmental about the person. It was like you had caused it. In fact, you were the victim.
I was the victim. But I mean, you know.
So you took that boat to England?
I took that boat to England. I went
along with thousands of other Irish people.
I went on the B&1 in, I think, 1901. First year I went off, I think it was 1952.
Oh, right.
And it was just after the war. And
so you were over 20.
Everything. But I finally went in 1956 because I came back in the meantime and I worked in a few jobs that were okay and got a few bob. And like car assembly. I'd done that in Dublin. And then I went to Birmingham.
Yeah.
And tried a few jobs there.
Yeah.
And it was never a great place. The only place I was ever homesick in the world.
What? Are you serious? Birmingham? Oh, that's a laugh. And yet it's full of Irish.
Yeah. But as I say, question of assimilating and...
And feeling, you know, you're on the wrong terra firma when you were in Birmingham.
I was a... You know, untrusting, if you like, to reveal backgrounds. And I'm talking now at the... Doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't matter.
And I mean, that's the history. That's the honesty.
And it's important history. Yeah. And we've come to discover that, especially in Ireland, with all the you know, the revelations over the last few years of people, and children who were born like yourself in the 30s. You know, who didn't have any choices.
Didn't.
It was abandonment, really.
Whether you like it or not, it defined you.
Oh, it does.
Yeah,
it does.
You know, and so I was stuck with it. Over the years, I rejected it and kept it a secret and didn't want to say anything about it and all that. But I find now that...
People are fascinated that you're such a great survivor. That's one thing. And that you have held your head in high with great... And you've got great respect and great...
But to get back to the language... The thing about the language, I think I was lucky in the fact that I was very young.
And
I can, the only real true memories I have are, you know, of learning the Gaelic through phonetics more than anything.
Okay.
Because I always thought that the grammar was a big impediment
to learning
the language. Mm, when you think of Maori, how phonetics play a big part in assimilating, with other people in the language, and I thought that was the big mistake that they made. They were in such a hurry to do it.
Yes, you see, but what fascinates me, John, is I came through the same system, mid-50s through to the late 70s, learning Irish as a compulsory but my Irish is nowhere nearly as good as yours, and I don't know whether we became slacker or we were just, but I didn't, and of course we were in Ulster, in Monaghan.
Yeah.
I just didn't have the same grasp of it as you have, and I'm fascinated with that.
Well, I wouldn't say I'm totally fluent. I'm not anything but.
Mm.
You know,
you have a good...
I find with the modern version, and don't forget the Gaelic language has changed about three times in my lifetime.
Yes.
You know, from Shavus and
yeah.
Old Fathers and That's Long right. Fathers.
And even the writing, the way we wrote.
And the writing, which I thought was beautiful.
I did too. I love writing like that.
And I still like it.
Yes.
And I could never... I thought they've anglicised the Gaelic.
Yeah. Yeah, was that 1968 when they did the last one?
Yeah, and...
We called it Government Irish.
I had to try and relearn a lot of the things, you know, but I still have... It's the biggest passion I have in my life, I think, about the Gaelic language and what the people went through and,
yes.
you know, and all the things that happened during the penal laws. And all, yeah. These are high on my...
Yeah. You feel strongly about it. But John, the other thing is that you've been a great singer and you've sung at many's the Wake and many's the Do in the Irish Club, and I've seen you at Graveside singing beautifully, Danny Boy and that as well.
Yeah.
So where did that all start?
Well, I suppose... it started in the baby schools, really,
right.
you know.
Yeah. Teaching you the Irish songs.
The Marys would call it Cahangareo.
Yes.
And they've got that right.
Mm.
They really have.
Yeah.
And the fact that we all sang together. The biggest shock I ever got was when I was with the Christian Brothers. I thought I was good enough to be in the choir.
Yeah.
Well, this old choir master come in one day, and he used to sort out what choir he wanted by, and he said, you know, sing this one. And he says, you can go. He says, you're out of tune.
That was you dismissed from the choir?
So I was dismissed from the choir. And one of the brothers said to me after, why aren't you in the choir? You sing well. And I said, Mr. Tommy, I'm out of tune.
Oh, imagine
that. No, that was...
Yeah. Little did he know, yeah. They used to have the same process in our school, and when they'd pick... was in those days, only girls were allowed to be in the church choir.
Yeah.
And they picked girls, and they would put out girls to the side and say, oh, no, she sounds like a crow. She can't sing. Oh, it was terrible.
You were very direct.
And I was very nervous that I was going to be a crow.
Yeah,
So when I made it into the choir, I was overjoyed. Yeah. But there was no criteria for it at all, apart from, I think, being able to sing a bit loud. So, John, then when did you come to New Zealand? What year did you come to New Zealand?
Oh, well, we spent, 56. Left Birmingham. We bought a house because you couldn't get a house in Birmingham then. We didn't have enough earning power then. So I went to live in a place in what they call the Black Country.
Yeah.
It was over at between Wolverhampton and Walsall.
Yeah.
Called Willenhall. And I worked over there with a company, and we used to make nuts and bolts.
Yeah.
And I worked there from, it would have been, we came out here in 72.
72, anyway, so. Right, wow. Yeah. Like, did you know anybody else? You had married Mary at this stage, the love of your life?
Oh, yeah, Mary, we married, and actually we were in Birmingham both together, and then we went to... We went back to Dublin to have the wedding.
Yeah.
There's some of it up there.
Oh, lovely wedding photographs up there. Yeah. And Mary had been born in Dublin as well.
She was born in Dublin too. Mm-hmm. She was born in Donnybrook.
Yeah.
And a bit of a tough she was in those days. And,
from Donnybrook.
I won't go into the details. And we, then she came out and lived at Kilworth Road, and used to go around the houses and
Yeah.
That's how we met.
Wow. And then you both decided New Zealand was the place you'd come to.
Well, Mary was a bit reluctant, but we saw no future in England.
Yes.
You know, so and they were pretty hostile.
Yes.
To Irish.
Oh, yes.
You know,
oh, I know. In those days, yeah.
And we lived in a parish in Willenhall where there was an Irish priest down further up towards Wolverhampton.
Yeah.
And he was stirring the Brits up at the wrong time and the wrong way. And,
oh.
And there was a bit of go-home paddies around all the... Anyway, it's not the place to stay. So I saw an advert on the local rag and I applied for it, for the same job. It was the GKN company. I had a parent company in Melbourne and was opening a factory in the hut.
My goodness.
It was Ajax Fasteners, that's what it's called.
Yeah. Okay, John, so you saw this ad... for the same company, the car company.
Yeah.
And out you came.
We came to, it was a nut and bolt factory in Seaview.
Oh, okay.
And I didn't have another job in New Zealand. I was 22 years with them.
Oh, wow.
And
so you stayed with them for 22 years. How many children did you have? Because I'm sorry.
Well, We
rushed this lovely story.
We had five children, all born in England.
Oh!
All born in Birmingham.
Oh, I hadn't realised that.
And Wolverhampton.
Right.
And our last child was born in Lower Hutt Hospital. Yeah.
Wow.
That's Joseph.
Yes.
Joseph.
So you're
Joseph's the only Kiwi.
Only Kiwi, but all these Irish people.
Do you remember the Golden Kiwi? We called them the Golden Kiwi. Yeah.
And of course, you're the father, you're the parents of Geraldine Brophy, who the very, very famous actress here in New Zealand.
Sure. Yeah.
And she's certainly got a high profile, and I know that she promotes her Irishness quite a lot, which is lovely.
Oh, very much, yeah.
Yeah. They're very patriotic, all the family. Yeah. Mm. And how many grandchildren have you got now?
12.
And
12 grandchildren, and we've one great-grandchild.
One great-grandchild. Imagine that, yeah. So, John, sadly, we'll be running out of time soon, but I need to know that, like, with all your involvement as an Irish person here in New Zealand, has that cultural aspect that you've always promoted and really kept up been one of the strengths of, you know, you feeling at home here, or...?
Oh, I think I wasn't when I first came to New Zealand, I wasn't very much in contact with the culture.
Yeah.
Other than by going to church and that, you know,
yeah.
I met the odd Irish fella and you know, made a few friends there. But then through John Shepherd.
Oh, yes.
John Shepherd and a few others, they said, why don't you come down to the club?
Yeah.
So we did that They remained, you know, I thought at the time it was an opening for the kids as well because they were introduced to other people of the same persuasion and background.
That's
which
right.
Was,
yeah, really
which
important.
Was really a godsend at the time.
Yes.
Where it went to from there, I don't know.
But you did.
We survived.
You did wonderful work for the Irish community and in many, many ways. If anybody wanted to know anything about anything Irish, when we came here, ask John Brophy or John Brophy is your man.
Oh, we did have a little class down there. All together.
Yeah.
We struggled along with lack of background and stuff.
Yeah, funding and that.
I never was a teacher.
Yes, but you did really, really well. Yeah. And when we, many years ago, put on a little thing at the Dell, you did the... coaching the children in their pronunciation for the carols in Irish.
Oh, yes. one of the great ones that I had really touched my heart was the seven...
Oh, the Seven Graces of Mary.
Seven Graces
that
of Mary.
That was beautiful.
Yeah.
And you taught
and
us all the pronunciation.
I haven't got any of it now. I try to tell people about it.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Because it... I was telling people the other day about most of our Marian background stems from the Brits, yes. actually,
oh.
believe it or not.
Yeah.
Most of the Marian devotions and that.
Mm-hmm.
And I wondered whether the rosary, well, it was pre-rosary time because
yeah.
the rosary only came out in the 12th century
yeah.
with St. Dominic. So that was a big surprise to me, the 12 Graces of Mary, because that was part of the Celtic
yes.
Catholicity.
Well, you know, that leads me into a lovely song that we can play for you on the radio by ending this programme,
yeah.
The Seven Graces of Mary, and
oh,
we'll
I
do it as Gelga.
Yeah.
And John, a huge thanks for agreeing to do this little interview today. I think there's a lot more to be said. Maybe, you know, the next birthday.
Yeah.
Lot more to talk about, like your life here in New Zealand and how it is for an Irish person and leaving home and, you know, all the stuff that you have done here for New Zealand as an Irish person. And we thank you so, so much and wish you a very, very happy...
You've been listening to Capital Irish on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. Thanks to the generosity of our sponsors, we couldn't be here without them. Our sponsors are Wellington Irish Trust, Susie and Peter McGuinness, Hutt Valley Irish Society and Butler's Chocolates. A very big thank you from all of us on the Capital Irish team.
That programme was brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.
Thanks New Zealand On Air for funding accessmedia.nz.